G'day and welcome to the post-match couch show. My name is George Xanthus, making my debut here on the Day Trippers. It's a huge honour and I'm very, very happy to have two very, very special guests. I'm so psyched that I've got you both here. Seriously. And we're going to talk about Liverpool thrashing Hoffenheim 2-1. It was an absolute whitewash. It could actually be 4-1 if we take the away goals into it.
It could. I mean, you know, when you get a side coming back to your home ground that need two goals to score, you might as well have two goals.
Might as well have eight. Fuck it.
Yeah. the 12-0 definition of absolute insanity of scoring goals. That's what Liverpool was.
Absolutely. Well, just there, everybody, you heard the voice of Matty Camp. Matty's a huge Liverpool supporter. He's actually the, am I right saying, the treasurer still?
Former vice chairman and treasurer of the Liverpool Supporters Club. I've just retired.
He's just retired. Wow. Yeah.
After 8 years hanging up the notebook.
Of the New South Wales Supporters Club.
Yes, that's right.
So you're one of the biggest supporters in the city. Maybe the state. The country.
I would say the state. Possibly the country. I would say top 10.
This side of the equator.
Yeah, the southern hemisphere, I would think. South Africa does pretty well.
Hyperbole aside.
But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Great. So we do have a Liverpool supporter on here. So it's very, very, I'm very, very happy to have you on the couch. Very, very honoured. Thank you for making the trip. We've also got a very good friend of mine. Very, very good friend of mine. Chris Ferreira. Now, Chris, you get paid to be a coach. So you're a professional football coach.
Let's call it an assistant coach of a semi-professional team.
Ooh, I love it. Getting paid the big bucks.
That's a long
getting
title.
Paid bucks.
Long titles are impressive.
It is. And I cut it short, actually.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
So you've done your badges.
I've done my badges.
You've done badges.
Yeah. So I'm an assistant coach of an NPL 3 team, Dollar Chill, under 20s. So that's effectively the reserve grade. In the third tier of New South Wales competition. So
what I love about this is that we're not only getting sort of a professional, I mean, you don't have to be professional to have a good idea about the game, but not only are we getting that aspect, but Chris is not a natural Liverpool supporter. I mean, you're Liverpool curious. You swing that way.
We're going to get him.
We'll get it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're curious, but you are a Madrid supporter, am I right?
I'm a Madrid supporter, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We like that. Anyone who's not Barcelona at the moment, I think we like.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Madrid aren't after any one of ours. So, and, you know, I've told him about the $15 Liverpool Supporters Club membership that gets you 10% off at Cheers Bar, so I think he's sold.
I think we've sold him. You're retired, you're still working.
Yeah, never quit. No days off.
Plans made for the weekend, put it that way.
There you go.
Nice. You get your money back on the first beer.
Get them on the website.
On that first 10 pints. But yeah, look, let's get stuck straight into it. We're on the beers. Have to make an admission. We're all on the beers. Yes. Matty didn't want to get on the beers. And he just goes, let's just do it.
I had a 5-course dinner with a wine pairing as well. So
We had a 1-course dinner. What did you have for dinner very quickly?
So I was eating at Automata, which is a 2-headed restaurant in the hotel that I work in. I really couldn't describe the menu to you. It's way above my head, even with my hospitality background. But suffice to say, it's normally an $88 per person tasting menu.
We had a 2-course meal. We had boneless chicken, zinger style chicken with a side of fries and a potato gravy, from the lovely establishment of the fried chicken from Kentucky.
Original recipe.
That's a favorite of mine as well.
It was on the menu just as bucket of shit. That's how it was. But anyway, so we're fed, we're drinking, we want to talk about Hoffenheim because Liverpool they've got a foot in the door, but the job is half done. As they say. I wouldn't mind getting your guys' just thoughts about, because you've both watched the game. We've all watched the game. Just getting a few sentences, an idea of what you thought of the game in general. Matty, I'll start with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that one was more worth getting up at 4:30 a.m. for than Watford was staying up till 3:30 a.m. for, with the afters and watching the next games. I thought that it was another sort of Liverpool slow start. After about 10 minutes, I was thinking to myself, will we ever not concede in the first 15? But that penalty was taken with about the same amount of skill that I could take a penalty. Yeah. So, you know, fortunately, I think Mignolet got there even too early on his save and parried it away when he maybe had time to just walk over, collect it, and, you know.
It only happens in FIFA.
Autograph the ball.
Where the keeper like catches the ball yeah. for like a shootout.
Yeah, no.
I'm all for the punch. Punch it out. It's all
keeper's instincts. Just keep it out of the back of the net. Yeah. If you've kept it out of the back of the net, you have successfully saved the penalty. Unless you're AC Milan in 2005 Champions League final.
Shots.
Ooh, shots fired.
All Italian listeners just went zzz.
Yep. And all the Italy subscribers just logged off. So now that they're gone. But after that, I think Hoffenheim still retained a bit of momentum. They still kept coming at the goal. Liverpool had some nervous defensive moments, as we've come to expect. But then grew into the game, as we saw towards the end of last year. We saw Liverpool start growing into games from slow starts. And I think it might be becoming a hallmark of this team, although I wish it wouldn't. But, you know, it seemed like Hoffenheim's missed chances. And then a few of Liverpool's close chances then started to swing the momentum, I think, a bit in the Reds' favour.
Well, Chris, you haven't seen much of Liverpool's preseason. You saw them last year. I mean, you're watching sort of, you know, you're with an interested eye. But what did you take from it? I mean, you watched the Watford game as well, you said.
I did watch the Watford game. I didn't watch it with, I guess, as keen an eye. It was more of a entertainment value for me, if you like. That was actually a pretty entertaining game. And I actually thought today's game was actually quite good. It was quite open, even from the beginning. I don't know. I haven't followed Liverpool in pre-season, so in speaking to friends who follow them, I've been surprised with the... I'm going to call it panic stations. It's probably an exaggeration. But, you know, like, to hear people say, oh, you know, we've got so many guys out for the first few games, you know, it's going to be back to the wall job. Whereas I saw the lineup against Watford and I thought, that's actually quite a good side. Okay, maybe they... I didn't know what to expect from them, but I thought, that's on paper, that's a good team. And to be honest, watching them today, I actually thought they were in second year, to be honest. I thought they played a Hoffenheim team who were probably playing, you know, an 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 for the way they play. And I saw a Liverpool team, to be honest with you, still in second year. So, yeah, it was a good game. And I think they did what they needed to do to win without, you know, exposing themselves, you know, through risky football. To put it that way.
Well, yeah, it's sort of the way that I saw it as well. I think you both hit the nail on the head, and you know, if only more of our supporters can do that. Just it's almost like we probably need to just go to sleep for 6 months and come back and go, this is not too bad considering where we've been in the past. I mean, that's probably it's the best way to look at it. We should just get an outsider, because you know what? Actually, a lot of people do say that, like, supporters of other clubs often look in at other you know, we look at Chelsea and we're going, you guys are fine, but in their club, they're panic stations as well. Yeah, Arsenal exactly. Panic. Everybody's panicking around their own team.
Yeah.
There's not that much we have to be panicking about, maybe a little bit at this moment, but I do actually want to pull up some quotes now that we're here, now that I'm making impressions. Jurgen Klopp, I don't know what you guys make of what he said at the end of the game, post-match comments. I will do it complete with impression. Just it give you an idea of how the game went against Hoffenheim. So he was asked, what did you think? How did you think it went? You know, we played defensively well because, you know, the plan was to let them play in spaces that we believe are not dangerous or interesting to us. And so basically that's what he said. Basically, we defended really well and anything they did was pretty much not that impressive. And then what did, what's his name? Nagelsmann. What does Nagelsmann come out and say? He comes out with his gloves on and says, I don't think that's true. He's not going to sit there and say, Hoffenheim played insane and my team played shit. I think we did pretty well. Wow. Has he got a point?
Well, I mean, I don't trust any football manager younger than me. No offense.
How old are you?
Chris.
Is he too young, Matt? I think he's too young.
He could be too young, man. That remains to be seen. I think, yeah, if you take managers on face value, then I guess you haven't been following football that long. They're not going to tell you exactly what they thought. But Klopp made some decent points in that. I think we worked out pretty quickly how Hoffenheim wanted to play and who they wanted to get the ball to and who they didn't want to get the ball to. And I think, you know, we sort of gave them channels that we would prefer they went down. We knew we weren't going to stop them outright. You never stop any football team outright. Whereas it may have been a lesson learned maybe against Watford where, you know, we let the wrong people have the ball too much with Watford, the more clinical ones. So you saw today that Hoffenheim seemed rather wasteful with a lot of their chances, and it seemed like maybe they were trying to snatch at a few. Maybe they thought they wouldn't get many quality chances because they couldn't get their quality men on the ball. So it could have had, you know, that effect on them if Klopp is saying that that was the tactic and rather a consequence.
Because I found when I watched the game, so Liverpool, the way that they set up, they seemed to press very high. But Hoffenheim, like, I think Chris, you made a really good point. You said that they were at 8 out of 10. Liverpool was still in second gear. Now, whether that's... by what do they say? By design or by what's that thing where it's like either you mean it or you didn't. I don't know if Liverpool quite meant to play in second gear, but I was just so impressed. I was so impressed with Hoffenheim. They played a 3-4-3 with the two shadow attackers that act as a left and right forward. And it's basically the system that Chelsea play. And I actually found them getting the ball. They played it vertically very quickly, and they just bypassed Liverpool's press. But also Liverpool's very flat three. They were playing a 4-3-3 with the flat three in the center who were all interchanging with one another. It looked a little bit shaky, but I thought Hoffenheim played really well to start with.
I thought they did play well. I think they play 3-4-3 quite well. I think what sort of played into Liverpool's hands, and maybe it lends itself to what I was saying before about them, you know, Liverpool seeming like they're in second gear, was they didn't really go out wide. That is Hoffenheim. They didn't really go out wide. Like you said, they went vertically quite well. And I think that's also part of what Liverpool were doing. You could see Salah and Mane were very deliberate in how they would press their three centre-backs. So they would force them inside instead of allowing them to go out wide. Not that Hoffenheim had anyone special out there.
No, they've got fullbacks essentially. They had that guy who got hit. Look, was that the right centre back or the right back that got ripped by Mane? He had to come off because he had a yellow.
I actually think that was the right back.
Yeah.
But so I think, you know, Hoffenheim, they played it well, but I just don't think pound for pound personnel wise they're as good as the Liverpool players overall. They're maybe playing better at the moment. But Liverpool's players, it's not their best 11. We know that. And I think it was more about Liverpool accepting the situation that they were in, playing tactically smart, and not exposing themselves with high risk football. So I think that worked it well in their favour.
I do want to get your opinion, Matty, on the 4-3-3 and this flat three in midfield. I'm gonna bring it up again because I'm just not. Just because on the 60, I don't want to jump too far into the game because we're sort of looking at it in quarters and we're looking at the first quarter to first half with that flat three in the middle. I just felt the game turned so much when Milner came on and he deliberately said, let's play a 4-2-3-1. You can see with his fingers, he did the four at the back, two in the front, and that's where he and Wijnaldum sat with Can in a little bit more advanced. But coming back to the first half, that flat three, we saw against Watford that there was a bypassing of the midfield. And it's almost like Klopp has set them up so that they're attacking like the one defensive mid and the two advanced. It's set up to be attacking, but they're not contributing, it seems to me, attacking-wise. I could be wrong.
I'm not entirely sure if this is formation of personnel or just a case of situational here. You know, we played about 250 preseason games and we cruised through them all.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know if that was necessarily the best thing for our midfield because, I mean, Jordan Henderson still seems off from the heights that we know he's capable of.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like he did when he was carrying the injury. So if it's still ring rust or whatever it may be...
he does have rust. Like, he showed that against Burnley last year. Then he came out flying after that against Chelsea.
But then, you know, he looked off it at Watford. And a little bit better today, but not that much better. And I think he hasn't quite clicked with Wijnaldum and Chan midfield. You know, that was evident at Watford. Nobody could complete a pass in that midfield. And that's where I thought we were really missing Coutinho, someone who you know can find passes, you know can put balls into channels and would have made the most of the wingers, especially with all that pace. You know, it's something that I think Coutinho has been really crying out for, is give him people with pace and options in front of him. So I'm hesitant to pass judgment on a formation just yet because it doesn't look like it's a team that's clicked yet, even though it's got all of the same people we basically ended last year with the exception of Salah. Yeah, that's the only difference in this team is, you know, Salah's in there and it wasn't there, but everybody else played last year. And then Moreno, I mean, you know, well, Moreno sets off something in Liverpool fans' brains that as soon as they see him on the pitch, it's, you know, the iceberg is heading for the Titanic and it's just a matter of time before we all sink into the water and die. Which I don't believe. I think Moreno has a role to play this year. I think he could be, you know, a very good fill-in, give Robertson time to actually settle into the team, because we know that Robertson's obviously going to be the preferred choice. You know, you don't go out and buy a left back unless you plan on playing the left back.
You don't blow like wicked amounts of money, like £8 million, on a left back unless you want to use.
You don't let go of England's Kev Stewart. You know, unless you plan on playing a left back.
Guy 67 in FIFA at best. 67 overall out of 100. Yeah. Kevin Stewart. Yeah. Sorry, man. Silver card.
You just smashed him.
I have no idea what any of that means. I have a 2-year-old. I haven't played video games in a very long time.
It's like worse than insulting his mum.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a case of it's going to take a few games to wait and see how this personnel really come together and what, if it is the formation, I think we'll know after a run of 3 home games that we have coming up now. Because if we continue to play like the last 2 games in midfield at home, then it's a case of something has to change there. It's something that, you know, everybody should be up for and should be, by the time we get to the other side of Arsenal, really in the flow of it.
I agree that there's some issues in midfield, but the front three are pinning back opposition so well that it's kind of masking it. And I think with time, as players start to understand, you know, how they're sort of playing this year, because we don't know, Klopp at the end of the day might be giving them certain instructions to try different things. For example, Wijnaldum at times was starting really high, I felt. Like, you know, playing with, say, Henderson as a 6 and him and Omerichan a bit further forward. It was strange to see how high Wijnaldum was. And he was almost not involved for a long period in that first half. But like you said, when he changed it, when Milner comes on, and he's more of a ball player anyway, so that was always going to help because it wasn't much going in there. It improved the situation a lot.
Isn't that strange to have players like Chan and Wijnaldum, we'll talk more about Wijnaldum in that, pushing forward. We're playing this attacking sort of, not, it's not an attacking formation, but there is clearly a thought process of let's get forward. And then, like you said, it's all about the front three. So it's almost like, does it even matter how they're operating in there? Because we're conceding chances.
Yeah.
Arguably, as Klopp said, they weren't not that interesting. But, you know, bring that impression out as much as I can. Yeah. But it's almost like just play defense and attack. That the midfield sort of, if it's going to be that non-existent, might as well play the two. But moving then on to the front three, they're pretty much just, they can make it happen for themselves almost.
Well, I think they're making the midfield look probably better than they are at the moment. I think, I agree. I'm Henderson's biggest critic, don't get me wrong. I was never a fan of Henderson initially coming into the Liverpool side. I thought he was always overrated. I thought it took him a long time to play well. But I was proven wrong last season a little bit. He actually played quite well at times as the deep lying midfielder, but he's not playing that way at the moment. And they're, you know, so maybe I think that number 6 is the most important player in the team. So I think if he can get firing, or if someone else plays in that position is better suited to it, the midfield will be more important in games.
To wrap up the first half, obviously we do score the goal. Now the goal comes as a result of Sadio Mane getting brought down. He arguably would have gone through and scored anyway. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah,
otherwise, of course. It was just justice. I love when that happens. Someone's free kick comes down. But you know, speaking about the front three, like I said, it's almost like we bypass the midfield now. I do want to get your guys' opinion on what you think of our two wingers, because they're two completely different players. Something I've got as a note here is that Salah is dubbed as the Egyptian Messi, and he has little talent. He's not Messi, obviously, but he's like an attacking midfielder that plays out on the wing. He's got all the qualities that a winger needs, but he plays like an attacking midfielder. He wants to pass and get it back. He wants to do little taps. He doesn't want to necessarily go past his man. The way he gets past his man is through intelligent runs, or like a dummy to let the ball run past him. So I found him to be that style of winger. And then Mane is just your all... he's incredible. I think he's the best... one of the best left wingers in the in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Salah is on the wing because he probably just had this pace growing up where whatever the Arabic equivalent of lad, you're fast, go out there, is, and all of his coaches in his youth, you know, they said, well, if we've got this fast kid, put him on the wing because he can cut inside and just, you know, break fullback's ankles. whereas his brain may be not the same way that Mane's is, where Salah doesn't look to take people on. I've noticed, you know, in the times that we've gotten to see him, he's not the same. He's not going to stand you up. Like Mane, as soon as he stands up a fullback, you know it's on. Because if that fullback stops moving, he's toast. He's done. They might get a lucky foot in and deflect it out of his path, but that's about it. Whereas Salah's going to look and maybe try and play a 1-2 instead, or you know, he's going to let that through ball maybe run past and try to cross to the other side of the ball and then maybe cut it back in a different direction or play something more creative for someone else and maybe be more of a provider. So I think when you see the wingers cutting in, And I think Salah also has to get his radar right because he's had a few golden chances already in this early season where he needs to finish. But I think if he gets a bit of a sort of brain partnership with Mane going in, Mane is the finisher that, you know, Salah can provide for. And I think that could be a goal-assist combination that we could see quite a lot of to come where Salah, the provider, for Mane, the finisher.
I'm not going to say that Salah's more technical. I think they're both very technical players, but it's as though Salah tries to use that technique more often. It's like he tries to play the more technical combination type play more often. That being said, he did have one chance where he was basically one-on-one with the keeper and being hunted down, which I found, I found was a really funny moment because I thought, if he just takes one step to the left to try,
he needed to be on his left foot because he's trying to dribble with his left foot whilst it's on his right foot.
Yeah,
so he can't, you know,
the ball actually, it just runs in that sort of different direction and takes him off to the right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas if he'd gotten a slightly different touch and it took it off to the left, I don't think the centre half chases him down as quickly. He gets a little bit more distance on that dribble and you know, is able to then do a step on the keeper and slot it in.
If anyone can remember, obviously a player that's nowhere near as quick as Salah, but arguably at the time was, you know, he's two times the world-class player, Luis Suarez against Everton, when he had that breakaway and he was getting chased down by Phil Jagielka, who was at one point or another the fastest centre-back in the Premier League, I don't know. But that's a difference because, it doesn't matter how quick you are, if you just make a wrong touch, you know, so we shouldn't be too upset. I'm sure he'll get that right. Correct. But
exactly.
Yeah, it just seems that Salah's the type of player to try and anticipate a little bit more than Mane, but Mane is the kind of guy who puts in that 5, 10, 15 sprints a game where he does create something out of nothing. So,
I mean, to wrap up the half, I do want to get into Trent Alexander-Arnold, but before that, I do want to talk a little bit about Firmino and whether it seems like it's very similar performances in what I think he performs generally a similar way. And it's that nicking in, but there's a moment, and I didn't quite get the minute that it was. I just want to get this off my chest in terms of, I think there should always be a moment that you pick in the game that's a Firmino intelligence moment. And you should just let everybody know, because some people are like, he doesn't do tricks, and he's not, he does do tricks. You know, he's not that quick, and he doesn't score as many goals, but there's just a moment where Mane loses the ball just outside the box, and he's the furthest forward. Now, Firmino's instant instinct is not, like, he doesn't need to sprint back to get into Mane's position. What he does is he tracks back and splits the two centre mids. And I just saw the Hoffenheim backline buckle, for lack of a better word. They buckle because they don't know who to pass it to because he's splitting them. That, for me, summed up Firmino's intelligence. He just, and whenever we see him just nick the ball and give it, it's always because he's splitting. And the player's like, I reckon I can get it to that player or that player. But he's just in the middle.
You do that to me in FIFA, man. It breaks my ball.
Yes, I know. I know you can only pass it to two people.
It's so upsetting.
Get in the middle of them.
Yeah.
Don't get me.
It's underrated, but he's getting correctly rated, I think.
Yeah. There's I mean, there's different types of intelligence in footballers, and you know, we're talking. And I think, good point before about Mane and Salah are as technical as each other, and are as intelligent as each other, but Mane's got a reactionary intelligence, whereas Salah's got a more cerebral thinking process where he plots ahead whereas Mane is just quick enough to react to whatever is happening, almost like, you know, he's in Matrix mode, dodging bullets and that. Yeah. And I think Firmino's got that same sort of Salah cerebral intelligence where he's already plotted in his head every scenario that might happen, and okay, a scenario's happened, and now he goes with that course of action that he's already thought about, which is what makes his pressing from the front effective, in that he knows what happens when the ball is lost. He knows what the defenders are going to think about already and what he has to do then to make that up. So that cutting off the two players at once, he's already thought that scenario through and practiced it many times before, and that's where we see him.
I mean, this is going to happen a lot in this podcast, I reckon, because I've got you here, Chris, but we see Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
That's 18 years old to do what he just did. Now, I don't remember Steven Gerrard scoring a free kick in his teens like that. We're not going to compare him to Steven Gerrard just because he's a centre midfielder for Liverpool who played right back, and he's actually a centre midfielder, and then he also plays right wing. I'm not going to do that, okay? I said I'm not.
You can hear X-Files music in the background.
Fuck Smolder. But from an outsider looking in, having, I don't know how much of Trent you've seen. If you have seen him, you've seen substitute appearances in the Premier League, possibly coming on as a more advanced right winger. What do you see from a game like this? And feel free to look at the whole 90 minutes if you want to, because we know him from the academy. We know him from LFC TV. We've probably both got subscriptions and we watch the academy games and the under 18s and stuff. We know what he can do. What does it look like looking from the outside? Does he look like an 18-year-old rookie?
He physically looks like a young guy, and you can tell. But I think he shows a lot of maturity for someone that age, which is uncommon. That being said, I do believe the goal Liverpool conceded was a bit of a brain snap from his point of view. He was waiting for the offside, blah, blah, blah.
Very late in the game. It's probably mental tiredness
as
well.
And you know, every player's done it, right? Yeah. So, you know, he actually did have a good game. In answer to your question, no, I didn't see him at all in any game other than Watford and this morning. But it was funny, just before he scored, I was actually thinking, you know what, he's had quite a good game so far. And actually, I actually thought Moreno had a good game as well. I think we can come back to him. But he seemed to push up at the right times. He had the right shape. You know, he could tackle well. And I think he was one of the few guys at the back who was a little, you know, be commanding when it came to long balls and headers, which was exposed more in the second half. So all the ingredients are there, the signs are there. He seems pretty switched on, and he's a pretty tall guy. He's pretty quick as well. So
he looks tall. I actually don't know if he's that tall because he looks tall, but I heard he was only 5'9", which is my height.
Quick plug. If you want to check out my Twitter today, I did post a picture of me with Trent standing next to him when I met the team when they were here in Sydney. And so you can judge for yourself. I'm 6'4" for reference. So you can judge for yourself.
Can you remember right now in your mental brain how tall he is? Like, if he was to stand, like, could you imagine on yourself? Can we stand up right now?
No, I can barely remember much of that day because I was over the moon. I felt like Trent scoring the goal. But
I want to get this photo.
I have the picture on my phone, which I will look up while I'm talking.
Why don't you look up the photo? You look up the photo? You were going to say something about Moreno.
Yeah, Moreno. I actually thought he had a good game by his standards. Now, I don't say that overly critically. I think he's the type of player that has that kind of potential. And it was funny talking about it with you at Futsal on Monday night. I asked you how old he was, and you told me he was 25. Is he 25?
Yeah.
I was in shock because I thought to myself, this guy's got to be like 21, 22 years old.
That's interesting.
By the way he plays from a maturity perspective.
He's mad.
Yeah.
He did it again. He does these wild challenges. Oh. He's got his right foot is hooked. He looks like a hook going into it. I'm trying to do it with my hands.
That leg weirdly. Yeah.
Ill-disciplined type of left back, but has the ingredients to be much, much better. But then again, I don't think that he was tested, and I don't think Alexander-Arnold was tested either, because
They weren't going wide,
Hoffenheim, you know. So, but, you know, that's not to say that they won't deliver later when it counts. They're going to be up against different types of opposition, playing different formations.
Very quickly, I'm going to stand up with Matt to see how tall Thingo is compared to...
Right.
That's the same. He's the same height as me.
Is he?
So there's... So there he is, and this is very bad for radio. You know, Trent.
He comes up to about 6'4". He comes up to about your nose.
He stands tall, obviously.
He does stand
up to his nose.
I slouch a little bit. You're not nearly up to my nose. So Trent's hairline is up at the top of my ear, and your hairline is at the bottom of my ear. So he's about, a little bit taller than you.
Bit taller than me. That's not that tall. I'm not a tall bloke.
No. Not really, but you got the looks.
You're taller than him.
Well, some players play and stand tall. You know?
That's good.
That's true.
That's
Carragher did. Carragher was like 5'10", I think, but he played like a 6'2" behemoth grok.
These guys were tired too. They had just flown, 24 hours, played in a game, and then, stayed out the next night to watch the Europa League final, and then went to bed at like 7 a.m. and we're back up at 9. So it's good on him for standing up that tall.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We'll get into the second half because that sort of ended that half fizzled out. But I thought Hoffenheim again the way that they fizzled the precise vertical passing that they did, despite what Klopp says about not in dangerous areas. I'm sorry, but if an attacker receives the ball and has a touch and can turn against your defense. I didn't like it. I'm sorry. I don't care what Klopp says. I didn't like it. But there is that moment that happens in the second half. It sort of starts sort of the same way. Liverpool look a little bit more controlled and look like that they know what's going on a little bit more than the first half. Yep. But the main moment is, I do want to look at my phone to see exactly what minute it is, but it's James Milner coming on.
Yeah.
It's that. It's using the four fingers and then the two in front. Yep. We're using that screen, and literally, I think that's about the 60th minute until the 85th when we concede, and we do concede from a long ball, so it's not from good football. There's no good football being played by Hoffenheim. Mm. We use the screeners, and something changes, and Liverpool, they don't dominate, they just control the game.
Yeah. I want to give my thought on this, because this is, to me, the most fascinating part of the game. So, I, to be honest with you, was, and I'm a neutral again, I was pretty shocked that. And I know everyone has said, and the commentators were at pains to say that, Liverpool's defence are vulnerable at the moment when it comes to set pieces. In fact, they have been for some time. Fine, that may be the case, but I don't think Liverpool looked that uncomfortable in the first half. But Hoffenheim were playing football, right? Mm. The second half, it was pretty obvious that the manager for Hoffenheim had said, play the direct ball as much... either as much as possible or much more. And I think that came off the back of a chance they had in the second half. Towards the end of the first half where Wagner hit the post. So it was a long ball played across to Moreno. Yeah, yeah. And Moreno didn't win the header. And then there was a scuffle. I think Mignolet made a save and then Wagner
hit the
post.
It was a one-on-one. Gnabry?
Yeah, Gnabry.
Gnabry got in and Mignolet saved it. Oh, it's a one-on-one.
I know. And then the follow-up went to Wagner, who hit the post. And I remember vividly seeing the Hoffenheim coach like smash something.
He smashed the bottle against the wall. Yeah,
I'm like, these young hot shots. Anyway,
he's too fucking young.
Yeah, he's gone out there. He's clearly said, play the more direct ball. And I think that was to Hoffenheim's detriment.
Mm.
Yet at the same time, I saw what was going on with Liverpool's midfield, and there was a period at the beginning of the second half where Hoffenheim was starting to dominate, and I said, he should make a change in midfield if he has an option. He did, and it worked.
63rd minute it was. I've just checked it. 63rd minute is that photo I've got. I do want to post it of Milner putting the four fingers and the two fingers.
It was a very good move, and I also noticed that Firmino was dropping more as a false nine, and that started to help as well. In fact, he had a really important role in the second goal. Firmino.
Yeah. Did he? Is it him that plays through?
He's
Milner?
He's the one that plays through Milner in the end. So I thought I agree with you. There was a big turning point in the game.
It would be interesting to see that moment because if he is dropping in, I think it was almost no. You know what it was? It was a it was the free kick.
It was
the ball was rolling, and Wijnaldum took a quick free kick. So it would be interesting to see if Emre Can replaces him because if we are looking at a 4-2-3-1, my favorite formation, only because I think it's just the quickest way to just sort out a team. Pochettino's using a 4-2-3-1 for Tottenham. I think arguably Mourinho. I mean. he's always been a 4-3-3. We've had this discussion before. Yeah, What's he playing with United now, would you say? It looks like a 4-2-3-1.
I didn't watch United in the first game, but he loves 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Mourinho. I mean, he's sort of always played like that in one incarnation or another. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know if United are playing that way.
Yeah. Regardless of what they're doing, this was more of a four, and then Milner, Wijnaldum, then Emre Can as the attacking midfielder, and then we've got our front three. And it was like that, and it was quite comfortable. I mean... It
was comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, what are your views now?
Well, it just cruised. I mean, you know, I did miss a little bit of it because I had to drive to the train station so I could go to work.
Aussie problems.
But, you know, I've got watched the rest of it on my phone as soon as I got there. But I thought...
Your work isn't listening to this right now, are they? Oh, they don't care.
Doesn't matter. My boss is a German who follows Cologne, so I'd probably have it to see Hoffenheim lose.
In this moment, the situation was fine.
Just a bit like that. So it's a case of... And I think, you know, great point about to Hoffenheim's detriment that they played so direct. I'm by no means a Bundesliga or Hoffenheim expert, but I was researching them a bit post facto today to find out, is that their capability? Are they really that good?
So
or they're
fucking
not
good?
But the thing is, right? It's much like how if we tried to play direct, it doesn't bring out the best in our team.
Agreed.
Hoffenheim only had 2 double-digit goal scorers last year, and they had a lot of goals coming out of other center forwards and midfield, and a lot of assists going around there, looking at their stats. So if I were to glean something about their team from that information, it looks like they're at their best, they're at their most attacking, and this is a team that didn't lose for a very long time in the Bundesliga last year. I think they went their first 15 or 20 games undefeated. Mm. A lot of draws, but a lot of score draws as well. They're at their best when they're getting the midfield involved with their attack. So by going direct, and I don't know if they were maybe psyched out by Liverpool's midfield, if he thought he might have that best, it did kind of take the teeth away from their attack. Mm-hmm. You could see a lack of clinical finishing. It gave me flashbacks to some of our Liverpool sides in the past, but a lack of clinical finishing really hurt them. Because they needed those center forwards to take advantage of the opportunities when they could get the direct balls. So they weren't able to get that. And then bringing in Milner to shore up that sixth position and just start becoming a distributor and keeping it calm and locking it down really just snuffed out any chance that they had to grow back into it.
Would it be fair to say we had two six? I'm not saying two sixes, but you know, if there is a six in there, would it be safe to say that there was two of them doing that job? Was that viewable?
For that period, yeah. Once Milner came on, it certainly felt that way. Omri Chan's pretty flexible, but I think he probably did need a ball player in there to make it work, to make it click. Henderson wasn't demanding the ball. If you're going to play by yourself in there, you need to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So
the goal's a bit of an anomaly, like we said, from the rolling start. The referee was a bit strange because there was that one moment where we were like 4-1 or 4 against the keeper and he brought it back for the yellow card.
Oh, yeah,
remember that? They didn't play the advantage.
Yeah.
We mentioned the goal, Milner's goal, which was the rolling free kick, which possibly couldn't have stood. I would have been, I think it's a dumb rule anyway. Who cares if the ball's wrong? Just take the free kick. Who cares? But anyway, that happened.
True. Debate for another day.
Yeah. But then getting on to the third goal, because we did mention that was quite controlled from Liverpool. They were doing all that. You know, Minelay was taking his time again. I love it. Yep. I hope he gets another yellow. I want him to get sent off for time wasting.
Mm.
Can you get sent off for time wasting? I want him to.
Well, if it's his second yellow, absolutely.
I want him to.
Well,
I want him to get at least one red. I think I'm going too far.
A little bit. Although it would be nice to see Karius back out there again.
Yes.
I love him.
But I want to sort of focus on. I mean, we've gone through it on how their goal came.
Mm.
Apart from the fact it scored from some dumb cunt named Uth. The fuck does
all I can
Uth
think of is Huth.
Yeah,
I know. Wishes,
he was either, it gives me like
either be Huth or like or just, what is Uth?
I don't know.
He's forgotten the consonant at the beginning of the word.
I'm not here to disparage Germans, you know, if you're listening.
His name's
I work for one. as I said, who was a great guy. Where were we even going? The goal.
It's like a ball over the top, basically.
I mean, if we remember in sort of calendar or clock time, it's about an hour after Trent scores. That free kick jumps up in the air. He's got the adrenaline has just started to come down.
Good point.
And we're off in his system. He's watched Hoffenheim be offside about 120 times. They had the ball in the back of the net.
Three, according to the stats.
Yeah. It felt like a lot more. It felt like they had the ball in the back of the net so often, and then the flag was just up.
Yeah. For a foul or for something. Right.
Yeah, something. Well, they broke the rules, so they deserved to be called on it.
Cheaters.
Yeah, cheat. So, you know, he's watched them be offside a couple of times. He's clearly seen that a player he thought was offside, and it's nearing the end of a what looks like a comfortable 2-0 away win. You know, just puts the arm up and forgets to play, you know, play the whistle. And that's all the space that Uth needed to get through. And to be fair, to be fair to him, it was a well taken shot.
It was
an incredible goal.
It was an incredible shot, and that was the sort of finishing that Hoffenheim really needed earlier in the match.
I know they missed like 6-1 on ones, and then they score a freak fucking from
That young manager was getting the shits, man. I was actually enjoying it. I'm like, what is Yogi Löw thinking from the grandstands?
You were saying that it was interesting that Yogi Löw was in the stands.
I was hoping that we'll get a pick nose moment. I feel like the cameramen are trying to get that. Whenever he touches his face, cut. cut to him.
It's rolling and recording all the time.
This guy, what's his name? Nagelharman. What's his name?
I read about him in 442 as being a young manager. He was upcoming, and
he's not only too young, but what the fuck was he wearing?
Where did your collar go? Did you just like rip it off in a fit of rage? Where did his collar go?
I've got a couple of things. Like, firstly, he looks like he's in a cult or something because he just had this long white shirt with like pants with the rolled up.
Is this guy a priest? Like,
it looks like he was going to baptize someone.
He was about to with that water bottle. Spraying all over his team. Power of Christ compels you to score.
The shirt was too big. It was like
a dad shirt, you know?
It's like the Back to the Future one where it's supposed to go. And you're supposed to like go to like he hasn't pressed the button.
I know.
It's like Marty McFly's son that like wears like half his sleeve off.
He was wearing like Converse shoes. I was like, is his mum picking him up after the game to take him home? I'm like, what's going on here?
He's got license restrictions. He can't be out that late.
Yeah. Oh my god. But yeah. Oh, they scored for him. That's okay.
Well, fair enough.
Where are we here? So I mean. There's one thing I did want to bring up because we're towards the end of this. We've done a fucking amazing job, guys.
Yeah, I think so.
This has been tactical heaven.
I really want to ask a question here. I really want to ask who needs Nish? Honestly, who does need Nish?
I don't even know Nish.
There you go.
Chris has never met him. That's can I make answered. I need Nish. I might need a little bit.
I see how
just
it
getting
is.
Him nice and intimate with the camera. With the camera. I'm too used to cameras, huh? Fucking actors.
Acting talent.
we love you, Nish.
We love you, Nish. Hope you're enjoying your honeymoon.
Me too.
I was going to ask, is it safe to say that Liverpool sacrificed possession in this game? Or do you have to pay credit to Hoffenheim for just being a really good foot? Because like I mentioned in the first half, they did actually play around Liverpool's press. I mean, is it safe to say that Liverpool sacrificed possession? Because it sounds like that's what Klopp was saying at the end. because Liverpool play really well when they sacrifice possession just quietly.
Yeah, I think I saw the stats say is what, 8 wins, 5 draws and 1 loss when Liverpool have less than 50% possession.
Wow. Whoa, that's great.
Yeah.
I just love the stat. I love that it's a stat.
Well, thank Liverpool you. Had 13, yeah. something like 13 attempts on goal to 7.
Yeah,
to
that's right.
So they actually had much more. I think on some level that happened, but I don't think it's conscious.
Yeah.
Pardon me, I'm just trying to get rid of a bird.
I think it was less. They're less focused on passing it around the back. Like Watford was infuriating for long stretches where it was just passes to centre halves in our own half, which is basically useless possession. You might as well not have the ball if that's what you're doing with it. I understand you're trying to go around, find a way through, and that, but at some point you just need to put it forward. And I think they did a bit more of that today. You know, there were some cases where they just put it forward and you know what, if Salah can't control it or, you know, if Firmino loses it, well, then that's what happens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it may have been intentional. It may have just been a case of we're trying something and still trying to get the attack and the midfield to work together that kind of resulted in that.
What I liked about Liverpool was it's hard sometimes to strike the balance when you know you haven't got your best 11 available to either play defensive or play and play how you should play, which is to your strengths, which with the team that you've got on the field. That's what I think Liverpool did, and they seemed quite calm about it. I don't know if you guys got that impression, but it didn't ever really seem like Liverpool were worried, which worked in their favour. You know, they were 2-0 up, and They created chances and missed chances.
They did. Like 14 to be exact.
Lovren had missed close headers by that point. You know, Salah had missed the one-on-one. So I think, you know, I think what it came down to is, and what I wanted to say was, I think, and I go back to a quote that I once heard years ago from, I can't remember which Italian coach it was, but it was Lippi, or I think it might have been Trapattoni, but he said, at halftime, a coach can either make a team 20% better or 50% worse. And I think that really happened today because
Klopp does that all the time. He actually says it's his favorite time of the whole game is halftime.
Exactly. And you know what? In this game, I was looking at it and I was actually thinking, you know what? Liverpool should probably not change anything. I reckon they'll have enough to get over the line. I think the players knew that. He made the right change at the right time. And I think the Hoffenheim coach actually hurt their chances of creating more meaningful chances during the game by saying, actually, no, we're going to play a slightly different style to expose our, inverted commas, weakness.
In and because he was dressed like John the Baptist.
Also that. Probably more so that.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, you know, if I had to rank the four halves of football in terms of how Liverpool played and how they've looked that we've had so far this year, I think Watford's second half, Liverpool played a lot better than they did in the first half. And I think then today's second half comes in a very close second to that.
Yeah,
true. It was, you know, it was more controlled, I think, than the Watford one. The Watford one was pure energy. It was the essence of Liverpool of we're just going to go out there, balls to the wall. Yeah, they had to get back into the game. So a completely different circumstance. But I think the way that they did that was a lot more of a dynamic and really marauding football team that we know that they can be. And then they just let it slip at the end. But then today's was a more controlled. We got another goal. Everybody felt good. It was a bit of cruise control. Yeah, they let the goal in at the end, but then heads didn't go after that. We didn't let in a second one, which I think, you know, most of our fan base would have been packing it and saying, oh, it's coming, especially when 4 minutes went up on the board. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we saw it out, and I think that was a very good display. So I'm happy with that.
I mean, just to wrap up, how do we expect Liverpool to go into Anfield? I mean, I'm expecting to see more control, more calm. We're going to use the crowd, European night, as they say, European night, under the lights. So I think in that regard, I think the belief and all that will be there. But also, I think much to this Nagelsmann, this fucking guy with this weird fucking shirt and these weird loafers and Converse shoes and pants, he's going to be also surprised by, because he actually said, he goes, I don't care if it's home or away. I'm going to play the same way. We're going to fucking do well. Yeah. A little bit confident. He's got to get off Facebook, fucking youngster. But I can see Liverpool probably playing more possession style game, you know, not sacrificing as much of the ball. I mean, does that play into their favour?
Well,
how do we see them going into the next leg?
Yeah, I mean, well, we don't have to score. 0-0 gets us through. So Hoffenheim's going to have to come out and try to open themselves up.
Do we even know how to do 0-0?
Well, I can't remember the last one.
Southampton last year.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. I was trying not to. It's a case of, so, I mean, Hoffenheim are going to have to come out and play. And he's already said that they're going to have to come out and play. And they know going in they need to score too. So does that open up the things that we want to do in terms of using pace getting forward? Absolutely. You know, the Nagelsmann's comments set me off on a little bit of a Twitter style rage. And that the last time we lost at home in Europe was 3-0 to Madrid.
I saw you put that.
Yes. Yeah. Somebody follows me.
Did I like it? I don't like you it. Did. You know what I do? I look at something and I go, I like that. And I leave it.
You don't like it. Yeah.
I don't actually heart it or like it. But I do like it.
Cheers, man. And then before that, I think it was 2010, against Braga or one of those. Oh, so, you know, the whole Europa campaigns that we've had, haven't lost at home. So it's a case of if he wants to come and try and take on that record, well, fine. We know he's going to try and score goals, and Klopp's going to set him up that way. I think our foes will be relishing all of the space that they're going to be working in. It's not as if they didn't even have space today either. You know, they had a chance to run down Mane and Salah. And I think if Salah gets, you know, maybe bags a couple on the weekend and then goes in with a bit of confidence, then he can possibly do a pretty good job against them too.
Absolutely.
Chris. Oh, I think Liverpool's front three will have more freedom in this next game, especially as time goes on in that game.
Yeah.
You know, even if Hoffenheim score first, Liverpool still have the box seat.
So because the away goals rule, they've got 12 goals.
Exactly.
Yeah. They've got to score 12.
My dad still think it actually counts double, even if it's not a draw. like we're watching Madrid and someone else, and you know Madrid are losing 4-3 or something, and you know
because it's 8-3.
He's going, mate, they got no chance. Like, what are you talking about? There's like 60 minutes to go.
Bro, it's 8-3. 4 times 2 is 8. Times 2 is 16. Like,
it's when it's minus a draw. anyway. Yeah. So I think as time goes on, Hoffenheim will become more desperate. And, you know, I think Liverpool have the artillery to beat them. And I think they have the psychological edge now. So I think it's set up the same way. Play, and I think they will naturally play a more open game because they're at home. And that'll work in their favor.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect. I'm going to get a quick prediction from you guys, and we're going to try and wrap this up under 50 minutes. So, quick prediction for the second leg.
Second leg, I think 2-1 to Liverpool again.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I think Liverpool win 3-1.
3-1, yeah, lovely. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time on the couch. Even though there's not actually a couch, you guys have been incredible guests on the couch. I really wish I could have you back on.
It's couch-like.
It is couch-like. It's been comfortable. Yeah. But that has been the post-Hoffenheim match on the couch. This has been the Day Trippers, and we're going to go get another beer. So see you guys later.